Hello, Pastor Deborah here, and I am coming to you with another wonderful National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse live radio show here on Blog Talk Radio. And we are going to be discussing a wonderful topic, for I'm a topic teacher to you. And the topic is about... Our topic for tonight is about the anchor of agape love in our life, and how if it is not set and anchored strongly, then many curses and evil, wicked things can happen to us, and we end up having mental health issues, problems in our lives. So you be encouraged, so you listen and learn about the anchor.
I'll see you out here on this live broadcast show from Blog Talk Radio as a professional survivor of NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. See you in just a minute. Bye-bye.
Blog Talk Radio.
What I've left behind, you want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Stop Child Abuse Now, SCAN radio show number 3431. And Stop Child Abuse Now is brought to you by NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. I'm going to read the mission statement for NASCA. We have a single purpose at NASCA: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. CSA. Presenting facts, showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. 2. Offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Okay, and tonight is Thursday, and so we have a call-in discussion with a survivor professional using an open mic forum. And our discussion will be hosted by me, but our special guest survivor professional host is Pastor Deborah Schleich, who grew up all over the world in a military family where her mother was mentally ill. Living in Pensacola, Florida now, she is trained in ministry, mental health, working with substance abuse, and is a trauma-informed social worker, all in one. She volunteers with many community organizations. Pastor Deborah says she can minister by text, phone, Skype, in person, and however the Lord directs her. She teaches that humans have three parts, being of spirit, soul, and the physical body, and believes that all three are important and that each area needs care. We look forward to Pastor Deborah being an active member of the Nasca family for a long time. On these Survivor Professional episodes, we welcome various co-hosts who assist in fielding questions and lead a variety of topics suggested by call-in participants. Their trauma-informed perspectives as survivor professionals will help them guide discussions on the issues of child abuse, trauma, and healthy human sexuality that spring from questions and topics brought to us by our listeners. Everyone's invited to engage in tonight's show. And if you would like to be one of our panelists tonight, please call in. The phone number to call is area code 646-595-2118. I'll repeat that, 646-595-2118. Give us a call, and I'm the one who answers the phone, so you don't have to be afraid, and I'll let you in, and you can be part of our discussion. You can ask questions and make comments and talk a little bit about yourself. And that would be great. You're welcome to call in. And with that, I'm going to say hi, Pastor Deborah.
Good evening to everybody here on this lovely, Thursday? May the 2nd, I think it is, of 2024. Hello, everybody. Annie, are there anybody on the phone line, or is it just you and me so far?
We do have one person, and I believe it's Philip. Philip has called in. I haven't unmuted him yet.
Okay, well, you can unmute him.
Okay, let me do that.
Hello, ladies.
Hello, Philip.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right, Philip. I'm going to talk about that anchor of love in a little bit, sort of. And you can help out because, you've got some understanding about it. So, welcome, welcome. You finished your walking? Got it all done?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. You know, the topic, Annie, that I had picked, last month we had talked about how abuse brings about curses and how you, in ministry work, how you would get rid of them by breaking the words off of people that had been said to them. And in mental health work, you never really were taught about curses or the power of words. But this month, I wanted to sort of talk about what the anchor of our soul was supposed to be and how, if that was done correctly by usually our mother and our father as we got a little older, then we could weather the storms of life when there's going to be a lot of them. But if that anchor was cut, destroyed, never set right, in ministry work, we would say you became a cursed person. And some of the curses look like loss of, you had fear because you were always afraid and the fear was always death. You had rejection. You had the loss of your innocence. And you had the brokenness of yourself, and you never really learned who you were. But I wanted to talk on the topic of the anchor. And from a ministry side, that anchor was agape love, which came from the mother. And how I try to explain it to people, it's like when the baby's in the womb, they're anchored through an umbilical cord. And they are protected behind the shield in the womb. When you come out and the umbilical cord is cut, what has to happen is immediately the baby is put onto the mother's chest, there in the face. The baby has heard the mother's voice, the heartbeat, and the mother speaks to the child, hears the heartbeat, you know, getting used to breathing air and not amber, the fluid in there, the light is different, but the mother's voice is beginning to go through the ears. The baby's eyes begin to kind of look a little bit, the five senses, which help anchor the baby and start developing, and chemicals in the body are getting turned on, so to speak, and pleasure is occurring. All of that is anchoring the baby in love. The happier here, oh, you're so cute, look, I love it. Words are being spoken. Touch is being felt, so the baby is being anchored. That means solid, has a tie, a bond to mother. Now, if you were a surrogate mother and you just had the baby for somebody else, or maybe you pass the baby to another person, but the anchors that mother, the eyes, the voice, the smell, the five senses, you know, the heartbeat, the closeness to the mother's chest. The baby is going through a traumatic experience. I don't think any of us remember being born, but you think about it. Muscles are pushing on that baby to come out. The head gets squished. It's got to go through a tunnel. You know, if the head, they want the head first. Fluid is flowing, you know, the baby's going through major biological changes to be born. It's working, it's struggling, it's trying to, it's trying to get out. It's being pushed out through an opening. It doesn't know what's happening. A mother's pushing, you know. And so what happens is when it comes out, the umbilical cord is cut. The lifeline. So now it has to be reconnected. And that's the mama's job. And where I learned this was that in Christianity, they believe love is the anchor. And somebody who has been had child abuse of any kind, there's always rejection, loss of innocence. Even if the mother doesn't do it, the child feels like she doesn't love me. And so this is vital for healing to occur. Because once that umbilical cord that provides that unconditional love is broken, through abuse, we'll say humiliation, rejection, then the baby is just sort of out there. It doesn't know where to go. It wants to meet these needs. And it seeks out love from stuffed animals. How many of us have loved animals? I wanted to be pacified. So guess what I did? I stuffed my son. And with my other hand, I had what I called a feeling of that new thing. And I still had it, but I would rub it between my fingers. But I stuck my thumb so much, even when I got my permanent tooth, I had to have braces. Because my mouth in the sucking, the thumb replaced the breath, which pacified. Okay, we have this sucking, you know, our mouth is a major part of things, and that's what I do. You know, they take the pacifiers away from us, they take them, that we go from the breast to the bottle, then we give the bottle up, or they take it away, and many things, they take away their pacifiers. Some of them, if you try to take them or suck the thumb, they put the bath salt on your thumb so you wouldn't do it because you say it. So we had trauma when we're still trying to get pacified love through our mouth. And that was the first, if you in the anchor is the mouth went to the breast of the mother. Closeness, milk, warmth, fall asleep, everything. Feel safe in the arms. And if you notice, babies are always kept close to the mother, even on the back. You know, mothers would go out in the fields and work. They would stop and breastfeed. There's a lot against breastfeeding and pregnancy. And babies went to bottles, and they went to pacifiers. And then when those ran out, we go to, we give them cookies and stuff, because the mouth is a vital part of the ankle. The ears, the five senses. The mama's speaking to the baby and baby talk, you know, or singing. The ears are going, it's going into the brain. The physical touch. All of those in the five senses, smell of mama's, you know, body and stuff, they're all a part of the ankle. The baby felt safe, loved, wanted, accepted. And if, you know, there was a loud noise, if you've ever seen a little baby jerk, you know, puts it in a blanket very tight, the arms aren't flailing around. So if that anchor, when abuse comes in later, we have major problems. And so I wanted to bring this topic up about how the loss of the love of a mother and a father, so that anchor is just gone. And the child's five senses and soul is floating out there among all of the issues. And the words are coming in that are not soft and pretty anymore and loving. They're harsh. The physical touch anymore. The baby is, you know, the child is rejecting, you know, the abuse, the words. They can sense the difference. And something, you know, bad is happening. It's changing the dialogue of the brain. The neurons, the chemicals, the five senses are reacting. They're on alert. The mind is, you know, it would probably be very interesting if we had the brain hooked up to the neurons, you know, and you watch the brain during the boost and the firing and the neurons and the chemicals. They can do that at the next time. Had a brain injury. A lot of us got it 5 to his head. And he would go into seizures. And they finally got him on Tegretol. But what they would do is every 2 months they put him, put little things on his head and did a, I don't know if it's an EKG or EEG, maybe it's an EEG. And they would look on a machine and they could see the electrical activity, like when he blinked his eye, or they spoke to him, or, you know, turned the lights on. They could see the brain's electrical activity, and there is a normal range. And if you've ever even looked at an oscilloscope and you studied audio and video, okay, you can see the range of the sound, and it's transferred into electrical things, and fall down. I had to learn some of this for television with my son. You can see the electrical activity of sound. Pictures that go in through the five senses and touch. They do a lot of this in psychological research. They'll get a subject will come in and they'll hook the brain up and they'll show pictures, different things, trying to see what happens with those pictures or different pictures, and they're flashing them before the person that's, you know, research, and they're watching how the brain is responding, the heart rate, you know, the blood pressure. And you're seeing the biological body change. So during child abuse, all of that is going on. Parents really don't know that's happening. Major changes can be occurring inside the brain. New neurons being created, ones being torn down, speed of lightning stuff. And without that anchor of a mother where you feel safe, in that area, that doesn't happen. I'll leave it there and see if Annie or Philip or anybody else has a comment.
Thank you, Pastor Deborah. Thank you, Philip.
Okay, Philip doesn't have any comments yet, and so far no one else is on the line. Let me just give the phone number again, and then I'll comment. The phone number to call in, as Philip has done and be part of our panel, is 646-595-2118. I'll repeat that. 646-595-2118. Give us a call, and you can comment on what Pastor Deborah is teaching us about, ask questions, and talk about your own experience. Okay, so I just want to say that I think I had a replacement anchor. Both of my parents were abusive, and so I didn't really have an anchor, you know. And so, but the school was my anchor. The school was like, that was where I was safe, and people loved me.
And schools schools recognize that in elementary schools. That's why they consider it a safe zone, because they know the kids can come there and feel safe. But at the same time, safety, feeling safe, and feeling loved there, maybe by one teacher, it's still not enough as a solid anchor of agape love from a mama. In mental health therapy, if you're going to try to go get healed, the mental health counselor, psychologist, psychiatrist is not going to become your surrogate mother. Okay, that's not going to happen, because they're not there to do this. Pastors sometimes will. My ministry was, I was to be a spiritual mother to the spirit and the soul. I had one biological child and could not have any more due to health conditions. But God gave me all of humanity. So people that I worked with in the heavy duty, deep in the occult, with multiple personalities, their mothers used to be called mothers of darkness, very abusive, satanic, witches, horrible stuff. So their initial anchor was even destroyed in the womb and right up, you know, after birth and stuff. So they never had an anchor set of true, genuine love. One guy I worked with named Owl, he had been abused since he was 3 or 4 by his stepfather, his father, by the coven, by witchcraft. His mother watched, his mother abused him sexually. He became a heroin addict, just horrible stuff. And I always went to these kind of people and said, I want to adopt you. And how that happened was, I was in church one night, and I hear the Holy Spirit say, what's the desires of your heart? And if you've never been asked that before, it is a powerful question. I was asked that. And I said, to be a spiritual mother to all those in the occult and witchcraft, everybody's ever been abused, heavy metal music, LGBTQ, anybody, everybody. So I could turn their hearts to the Father. And it was said, it's done. God anointed to be a mother. So I adopted spiritually. I said, would you please be my spiritual child? So in Owl's case, he wasn't sure about having a replacement mother, which would be, I'm going to anchor myself in you. I'm going to accept your love. I'm going to draw from you your love, and it's not going to hurt me. He had to tell me his story first. He wrote it to me, his girlfriend did, Miss Amanda. And he told me his life and what had happened to him and why he was called Owl. And then he asked me, he said, now you've heard my horrible story, do you still want to adopt me? I said, yes. He said, okay. Then he wrote me a couple of letters back and said, dear mother. So when the adoption spiritual takes place, the spirit and the soul go, I have a mama. She knows what's happened to me. She knows all the ick, and she loves me anyway. some of these people had killed and murdered babies, killed and murdered people and animals, and done even horrible, horrible, horrible stuff, I can't say. Okay? And yet this lady still loved them and wanted them to be their child. And some people took them years to even accept it because love had hurt them. Many people say, I love you. And they hurt you. They reject you. They're not there for you. In Al's case, I would have to call the police. He'd be overdosed somewhere. He was doing bad stuff. I had to get him to hospitals. He would talk to me on the phone. I had to walk him to his desk in a meeting. And helped. He never really got off heroin. He never really got off drugs. But he was going to be in heaven. And but what happens is that anchor got reset. And some of them, this one guy named Isaac wrote a beautiful poem called Love Is Here. And it says, we can see it. We can touch it. We can't talk about it, though. And it's all too unreal to us. And it causes us to be afraid. We're not sure about it. We can't openly talk about it to each other. We'll get in trouble. We're not sure what it is because we've never had genuine motherly love that forgives, even knows all the evil we could stop. He said, but one day we will come to learn that love had entered their life. So I was dealing with people who did not know anything about a genuine love and were not anchored. Didn't mean they all had multiple personalities, and some of them were evil and wicked, but I believed if I got one, that love just spread throughout everybody. And so love is the anchor of the soul, the mind, and how it gets destroyed is through abuse. Words said to a child, abusive behaviors towards a child, you know, slapping them, pushing them away where the child jokes or something. And if that anchor is not there solidly and they have it in their soul and spirit, I have a mama that loves me. Now, what that meant was I would protect through prayers. I used to have to do some spirit work and get them out of a lot of situations. I had to forgive them for everything they did or didn't do. Even if they tried to kill me, I had to forgive them. It was a hard walk to walk because you had people that didn't trust it, didn't believe they were worthy of love, didn't know what this real love stuff was because they had never had it. If they had it, was perverted. And some of it was perverted through words that come and spoken to people during the act or through very violent behaviors or just rejection. Hey, you know, leave me alone, you know, go watch TV, I'm busy or something. And you don't get the attention that you need. So in healing, mental health counselors are not trained nor taught how to be a spiritual mother or father. They can't really adopt you, sort of like that, you know. You don't really feel that anchor with them. You're still kind of floating out there trying to get your healing, trying to understand what happened to you, trying to not suppress things, you know, trying to get things exposed so they won't affect your blood pressure and things. Pastors try to bring in the word of God, or if you're an imam, you know, bring in the prophets and stuff. So I'll stop again and see if anybody has any comments so far.
Thanks, Pastor Deborah. Well, Philip, would you like to make a comment or ask a question?
No, thank you.
Nope. Yeah. Okay. Philip and I talked. We talked earlier today, you know, and I was going to, I knew that, so I wanted to. And I didn't realize when I was in even mental health counseling. I can tell you when I was a young kid, teenager, I would hang out with some of the strangest people. And I was in the South when segregation occurred. I never really had a problem with it because coming from the military, we had mixed races and mixed people, all everybody got along. And then I loved some of the weirdest people. You know, I went through the hippies people letting their hair grow long and stuff. So I loved some of the weirdest looking people. And I never really liked the women because they were all sneaky and sly. And I liked the boys. And I had a lot of boys friends. But I'd go out with disabled people in wheelchairs and go out with blacks when you weren't supposed to. Go out with older people, just people of different nationalities. It was, like, weird. And people would ask me, how could you do that? You know, because in the South, you just couldn't do that. You stayed in your little group. I said, I don't know. I just love people. And I'd give that love out to them as friends, you know. And then at night, God would fill me back up with more love. That's all I knew. And then as I got into college, I went through the hippie stage when they were doing the hippies and the Vietnam War. And, you know, people were changing, and yet I was military. So I hung out with some strange people, drug addicts, prostitutes, all kinds of people, and drug dealers. And I just got along with everybody. And I didn't understand what was happening. You know, nothing really shocked me about anybody's life. And that love must have just been there, you know, to be friends with people. And then as I went into mental health counseling and you start discovering people got issues. I saw it in my family, my mother, my brother, my dad. Okay, so suicide was horrible. But I didn't know why they had it, but I knew they had family problems. Of course, they didn't talk about them. And so, but I kept loving people, you know. And so this love was always there. Didn't know much about it. And I can't say my childhood and my early years of dating was very good, because it wasn't. A lot of sexual abuse and stuff like that. And boyfriends and issues and that kind, just not nice. And, but still, always forgave everybody. I don't know why. And then I got into mental health counseling, and you took classes like behavior disorders, personality disorders, child development, what was normal child development. And you took on how to counsel people, and you, did have long training. But they never talked about love. And how I got into it once I got out of the mental health field, I wanted to help people. I was in nursing homes and juvenile delinquencies and prisons and jails, homeless shelters. I worked in nursing homes. I worked in a rehabilitation hospital, just loving as a mental health therapist. And so I saw people in brokenness, you know.
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. Well, it says that Pastor Deborah dropped, so hopefully she will call back in right away. Sometimes that happens with the phones, yeah. Oh, here she is.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes what happens to me, Annie, is I get muted. I don't know if, and I have to hang up and call you back, and then, you know, it unmutes me. So that's, don't know why, but that happens.
It doesn't show that on the studio. It doesn't show you muted. So,
yeah, but that's what usually happens.
Technology.
So so I slowly developed this love for people who have been severely abused. And how it really developed was I'd go to church, and during praise and worship time, everybody's praying for God to bless them, I'd start crying for them and asking God to send somebody and help them. We'll say the Phillips of the world, whoever the, you know, I didn't know people's names. I don't know what it was, but people that had been abused, I knew they needed help. And I would pray that God would send somebody and help them. And he eventually said, well, I'm going to send you. I go, well, I don't know what to do. How do I have? You know, I got mental health counseling training. And then a little while after that, you know, he asked me for desires of my heart. And I said, somehow I knew the Phillips of the world needed a spiritual mother. They needed that anchor to be reconnected to somebody that loved them. They could call on the phone or just be in prayer for them, and God would do whatever. And that's, you know, I had no knowledge of what it would be until I would ask people, I want to be your spiritual mother. Some of them was right away, and some of them go, I don't trust that love. I don't want love to touch me because it hurts. I've had people tell me they love me, and they hurt me. And this one guy, Chris, he was a heavy metal music drummer for years. It took him years with me before he would allow the love I was offering him, just on the phone and in prayer, to touch him, because he was afraid of being hurt again. Okay? Other people readily accepted it. The children were no problem, but when you get with a male adult and some of the women, right, they don't trust this thing called love, because they had heard that from bad people. And they'd had mothers all right, but they weren't nice ones. And so I knew that that's what the anchor for the soul and the spirit would be. And then they could sit and just think, somebody loves me. I got a mama. She's not going to hurt me. And I can be at peace within myself because I got a mama that loves me. And that is what I started doing. And then I saw the healing that started coming to these people and how their lives were being changed just because of love. And I explained it to Philip today when my father passed away. This was several years ago. He was like almost 92. I had an umbilical cord to him. He was, you know, connection. We'll call it a soul tie, where he had been, you know, my support system. My mother was already gone. And when he passed away, this umbilical cord, this anchor that I had to him, was now cut. He's gone. And I knew if I didn't reattach that to the Heavenly Father, I was going to be in trouble. It was going to be flapping in the breeze. I wouldn't feel anchored, safe. So I said a prayer that I take that cord and I attach it up to the Heavenly Father. This is, you know, and so I'm reconnected, because our soul and our spirit does not like it being alone. Here I am.
There you are.
I don't know what happens. It does that, and I just hang up real quick. And then I call back, and then you see that I'm back online. What happened is I discovered that we all, even at my age, I'm, 72? I think my dad passed away in 2014, so maybe when I was in my 60s. We still, as a child, want to be anchored to a parent, whether it's a mother or a father. In my case, my father was sort of my emotional anchor. But I knew I couldn't let my umbilical cord dangle out there, so I prayed and made sure I was connected to the Father, who has a mother's side, and that's where my cord went. So I'm anchored, okay? And so one of the things when somebody gets abused in childhood, the anchor gets cut, or it never really gets set. And so the soul and the spirit are flapping around out there where it's dark and abusive. Words are coming in that are cursing them. They're feeling rejection, and they're not feeling safe, and they're not feeling comfort or peace. They don't, the innocence, they lose their innocence, and it just is a mess. So do you want to make a comment, Annie, with anything?
I'll just say that not having an anchor of my parents, because I really didn't at all, let me go into adult relationships that weren't supportive of me, because mm-hmm. that was what I thought relationships were. They, you know, they're not supposed to be good to you or anything like that.
Right.
And
right.
That was what I learned, was having people be mean to me. And so that's what I saw out in my adult mm-hmm. life.
What about you, Philip? How has, we'll say, that affect, you know, your early childhood affected you in your adult years?
Well, it's kind of affected my mental development and my emotional stability.
Okay. Yep, that's what, your emotional stability, that is correct. And what happens, of course, when it's happening to us, we don't know that that's what's happening. We are reacting, okay, to situations. We're reacting to words. We don't understand what words do to our brain, or to, if we get treated physically by our mother, we're pushed aside, or let's say we have a wet diaper and they never come and change it, or they are rough, you know, their hands are rough when they're changing us or a bottle, or they don't talk to us, they ignore us while they're giving the bottle or something like that, and they're not kind. We are affected by our caregivers, and we learn very quickly this relationship with these people are either good, we don't know what good is, but you know, we just, and we're, and it affects us. And our little brains, okay, are growing and developing the neurons and all the dendrites and all the roads and things like that. And of course, our physical body, when it has pleasure or pain, chemicals are being released in the brain. Nerves are getting fired up, you know, in pain or pleasure, and it's a mess. And this is all in a early childhood biological development. And our concepts of ourselves, of these people that say mama or daddy or family, or just the environment that we're in, it's not, we don't feel safe. We may not even know what safe is. Okay, and then throw in some words that are angry or yelling or loud music and that kind of thing. And we're a mess. And I just knew in helping people form a ministerial capacity versus mental health, telling these people I was working with, will you be my spiritual child? Some of them, and I actually wrote down, I got it somewhere, what my spiritual parental responsibilities were versus a biological. You know, I was dealing with people all over the world, still am. I have to adopt them on LinkedIn, on Skype. I have to sign off, your spiritual mother, Pastor Deborah. Okay, because I'm supposed to be your mama. I know that's the anchor. Mothers are teachers, comforters. They provide a basic, you know, condition. Their words have to say certain things. So I was counteracting all the negativity of the other mamas and the situations, and God was pouring in love when they accepted it. And I knew in the ministry that every person that I came in contact with, they needed a mother in their life. And they were sort of motherless. They were out there in the sea of life without an anchor. They had no safe harbor to go to where they could rest and be at peace, you know, when they laid their head down on the pillow and in their quiet thoughts. They were alone and scared, and what was supposed to be good had turned out to be bad, you know, and they were a mess. Mental health counseling did not teach me that. I was to help you sort of relive your abuse, help you come to terms with it, help you sort of just balance your chemicals out in your brain so maybe you could get a job and keep it and just kind of keep your thoughts to yourself. There was nothing in mental health at my level about multiple personalities. There was nothing much about really abuse, or later on, as you said, the trauma informed. They've realized now that there's a lot of different kinds of trauma. A parent dying, a parent being sick will traumatize a child. The loss of a brother or sister, moving houses. You know, my family was military. We moved every 2 years, 2 or 3 years. I didn't have any trouble with it. I loved it because I got to see new lands and states and nations and met new people. My brother didn't like it. He never could make friends. He'd get a friend, you know, one guy, to leave. And he gained weight, and he was sort of rejected by his mama, and he did not do well. I did great. So having a early life where you move around a lot, what happened if you become homeless, live in a car? Even though your mother's there, you don't feel safe anymore. You don't have that safety. And if a grandmother dies or grandfather dies, you know, and maybe they were your love anchor, and they're gone now. Parents getting divorced. So what they finally realized that there's so many other kinds of child abuse and trauma that occur that affect us in our adult lives. And a lot of it needs to be, you know, dealt with, cried over. You know, trauma, and they have the list, I think, 10 different things that happen. And if you answer even yes to 4 of them, you have been traumatized in your childhood. That's what that trauma-informed care is about. They just realize, you know, there's more than just sexual and child abuse. There's all kinds of trauma that affect the child's growth. And that kind of thing. And, of course, if you were adopted or were put in an orphanage or taken away from your parents, you know, that's traumatizing to the child and that kind of thing. So I had to learn more as a minister and a pastor about child abuse and the effects of it and how to bring healing than I ever did in mental health counseling. And, you know, like in mental, I might talk on the phone for hours to somebody. I used to have this one lady named Candy. How I met her was the church that I was a part of called me up and said, we met this lady, this one of our students in our Bible school, met a lady in the park who said she's a Satanist. And we all want to get her saved, but we're afraid to call her. Would you call her? So I did. And she told me, she said, I don't know what it is, but I saw something in that lady's eyes, and I don't have it. And I said, what is it? She said, it was some kind of happiness. but I don't know how to get it. And I said, okay, I do. And we took care of business. And but people were afraid of that. And then for the next 2 to 3 years, we were on the phone for hours every single night, talking, doing deliverance work, doing ministry. She would sort of zone out, and I kept going with what I needed to go with. And well, I had some strange, and we're in mental health counseling. You know, you have your office, and you've got 50 minutes, and then that's it. And I'll see you next week or in a couple of weeks. And, you know, that was about it. Now, Phillip's got some really great stuff. I think you're still doing, what, AA or some of your support groups. Is that right?
Yes. In fact, I'll be going to one in about 10 minutes.
Okay. I knew you would. And what happens is those are like surrogate family members. And they are there, and you can probably call the people anytime you want to. You can't call the therapist, you know. Just if you need to talk to them at nighttime, but they're not on call. So love was coming through the support groups and not through mental health counseling. So a lot more people get, say, healing and a lot of things that they need through support groups and peer support groups versus mental health counseling. And, of course, your psychiatrist, he's not really there to do that. He's just to make sure you take your medicine and you're not having any problems on your medicine. And that's about all they know what to do is, you know, give you medicine, or unless they need to give you electric shock treatments or do a lobotomy on you or something like that, or sign your, to put you in a mental institution. So any comments, Annie or Philip, before you go?
Go ahead,
Philip.
Thank you. What's the last thing you said, pleuromedy? What is that?
What is what now?
Pleuromedy. The thing you mentioned.
Say that again.
You said that your psychologist will test if you need medicine, electric shock therapy, or something else that starts with like a P. Is that where they remove the part of your brain?
Yeah, lobotomy. Yeah. What they do, if you study psychiatry, they were trying to help people. And they knew there was something wrong with the brain and their emotions. And years and years ago, they didn't know what to do. And they didn't have the powerful drugs, you know, that we have now. So they would go up the nose and up to the frontal cortex part of the brain, and they'd sever it. So you wouldn't have any emotions at all. And they did this. And they tried steam baths, and they tried everything, because they were, you know, I have to give them credit. They were trying to solve problems that they, you know, didn't have the answers to. And then medicine came out that just kind of drugged the brain, is basically. And then some of them, like the Tegra, my brother took lithium for his manic depressive and borderline. And what lithium was made was from the salt from pigeons. So they discovered, basically, there was a salt probably imbalance in my brother's brain. And that's what the psychiatrist, because remember, they're medical doctors first. And if they can't do surgery to remove something or fix something, the only other thing they have is medicine. And so the psychiatrist, you know, he's trying to deal with emotions and thoughts and beliefs and strange behaviors, and he's trying to get some strange thoughts dealt with and feelings and things. And he has only got surgery where they take out, you know, part of your brain, or maybe he had a brain tumor. You know, they learned a lot from, you watch with Will Smith, the movie Concussion, about the football players and how they kept hitting their heads, breaking the blood vessels deep on the inside. It changed their behaviors. And they went nuts when they were tired. So brain damage can cause mental illness. Okay, so that's why they always ask if you've been hit on the head, you know, have you ever had your head slammed? And, you know, they're wanting to know if there's any kind of damage. My son, he had seizures because he hit his head. And it took about 8 years for his brain to heal and not have any more seizures. Okay, so kids, you know, they fight and they toss and they get bit. But a psychiatrist is a medical doctor who's trying to solve a problem of the brain. And it's either a biological part that needs to have surgery cut out in your blood vessel. You know, you had a stroke, but blood didn't get to the brain. You've had a brain aneurysm, a brain bleed. You've had a head injury. But just having, if you've had sexual abuse as a child and you didn't get your head beaten up, there's no evidence in your biological brain of the sexual abuse as a child. You have feelings and you have emotions about it and you have thoughts. But there's nothing there that the psychiatrist can use except medicine. He can see there's a chemical. Oh, you got off into drugs and alcohol. Well, we got a chemical imbalance. Oh, you need some extra salt or you need some of this or some of that. Or we just need to numb the brain out, dim, you know. And I worked with this one lady. She was hearing voices. She had been in witchcraft. She was hearing voices. And I called her psychiatrist, and they were just going to up her medication because all they knew to do was give her more to drown out the voices. It's basically just, you know, drug them up to the point where they just don't do anything. And that's where you see a lot of people who've been abused. They are seeking that peace and calm inside, and they'll go to alcohol, drugs, okay, and then they need more drugs and things like that. So there's self-medication in many different ways. And, of course, I don't talk a lot about that in mental health counseling. And like I said, there's different levels of your training. And your psychologists, most of them are into testing. I did a lot of testing, you know, and because a psychologist is the one that says, oh, you have definitely post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, I could do diagnosing because I had the license, and I could say, oh, you've got major depression, you know, you meet the criteria of the DSM and the World Health Organization, and there's a pecking order, and if you needed medication, I couldn't do that. I'd refer you to my colleague who was a psychiatrist, and then they basically took over your case because they're going to monitor you on the medication. But they figure, go to your support groups, you know, I'm just getting paid to give you the medication and charge you for the insurance. And so, you know, if you took all the chemicals out, you know, would you be healed? I don't know. You know? If you stopped all the stuff that the psychiatrist gave you, would you be healed? Or is it all right to take medicine? Sure, you know. A lot of people do. And they have, you know, they have pretty good lives, and they still do their therapy and their counseling and stuff like that because there's a lot of issues everybody has to deal with. And anything else before you need to go, Philip?
Yes. Wait, I forgot what it was actually because, yeah, sorry. I guess Annie can go now, right?
Okay, Annie, what were you going to say?
Yeah, here I am. See if I can remember. Seeing your moment. I was going to say, Pastor Deborah, it's gone. I'm sorry. I'm sure it will come back.
It's okay. Well, in this topic of love being the anchor, that's the beginning, okay, how in ministry you start working and bringing healing to people is that you love them. And it has to hold through some horrible stuff. And like I said, people can feel the love on the telephone. They can feel it just, and sometimes just a look. And so everybody becomes my spiritual child. I always say that. And that means I'm your mama. And when that happens, they are giving me the right to speak into their life, to teach them and train them, discipline them, if I have to. They feel protected. They're re-anchored and to something called love. And so when they sit quietly, you know, by themselves or they're doing their life, they go, somebody loves me. They know my story. They know my bad stuff. And they know what I've done and what happened to me. And they still love me. And they won't hurt me. And like I said, some people accept it easily. Some people challenge me, say, you don't have a right to do that, because this one guy, he was in the heavy metal music and something else. And he was so angry at the Christians because they had abused him and turned their backs on him and stuff. And I had to apologize to him. But he eventually accepted me, and typically they go on with their lives. Some I'm very much involved with. And a mother is also a teacher, and she's the first teacher. She affects the biological body. She affects the soul and the spirit. So the love can go, you know, just by words. And how I prove sometimes, this one guy, his name was
Gavin, and he had been raped by a steel rod.
He was a heroin addict, which I got him off of that. Never met him in real life. Talked to him on the phone all the time. And he was afraid to take the medicine for the pain because he was afraid he'd get re-addicted, you know, to it. I said, I'm going to show you a love that you don't know about. And I'm going to pray that the infection that you're to get will be given to me, to show you how a mother's love is so powerful. It will die for you. It will take what is supposed to happen to you and take it on yourself. And you will see this on a cross of a young man that took everything for you. And I ended up getting an infection a couple months later, forgot about it, got diverticulitis, and ended up with a pacemaker. And I have the story, and it's called I'll Bear Your Burdens for You as Christ Bore Mine. And it was a teaching moment to this particular individual and many others of the power of love. I will sacrifice my life for you. I will take the hit, the abuse. I will allow myself, okay, to get the infection, to show you the power of true agape love. That's what a mother is supposed to do themselves. We'll take the hit for the child, to protect the child. We'll die if necessary, protecting the child. And what happened was, when a child is abused, they don't get that. The child is the one who is sacrificed. And for someone else's anger or pleasure or whatever. And the child never really gets that anchor of that kind of deep love. That's what I was to provide. Now, mental health counselors don't do that. Now, when Philip goes to his support groups, it's a lot of that. And I think the peer-to-peer support groups that NASCA puts on, each of the peer support people give it. But I have been asked before, how much would Philip's life, Annie's life, be worth to me? Could I take, if we relive this, would I take their place? So they could not be abused. Would I go the distance for them? And some people get asked to do that, and some people don't. I was always asked how much Philip's life was valuable. Could I take all the hits he took if we had to do it again? And I was asked, could I allow myself to be killed for someone else? To save them, to show them, which tied in, you know, spiritually to the Bible. And a lot of people, we see it in the soldiers. They go over there, I'm going to set captives free. I'm going to give my life and lay down my life. We saw it in 9/11. Remember, people run to the tower to get others out while others are running away. And so I just had a little different heart and mind that I was to sacrifice myself, that the love I had for the Phillips and the Annies of the world, I would take your place. So if I could, so it would never happen to you. And that was different than mental health counseling. So do you have something? I think Phillip's gone, is that right?
He is. He is gone now.
Yeah, he usually has his groups he has to go. So in mental health counseling, your therapists don't really ever get asked that question. They're more focused on, well, let's help you relive, you know, through hypnosis or imagery, and let's try to figure out what happened and maybe why it was done, and let's get control of our emotions and cry it out, you know, and things like that, where the ministry I was called to do was so different. But I've had, you know, both of them, the mental health, it'll help you in a lot of areas and deal with a lot of stuff. And, you know, I did the crisis helplines, and those are vital and important. Did the peer support groups, the grief support groups, and that's all good and it's all helpful. You know, then you have your Bible studies and you have your ministry levels. I was in the jail and, you know, doing that, and it's as good too. And I think what happens is people just got to keep going to try to improve themselves. What do you think, Annie?
I think so. I personally believe every day that I need to improve my health and stamina, and I need to improve my mind with new knowledge. I'm always on an upward trend.
Oh, that's good. That's good, Annie.
Yeah, not that I'm not lazy, because I'm lazy, but.
Well, like even at mine, I've been around a long time, 72. I study every day. I'm watching videos every day, and doing history and learning and watching dramas about emotional things and people and culture and history and forced marriages and businesses and big tech and different cultures. And because when you be mental health counseling, you really never, you know, you have an office and you see people from your local area. Now, if you write a book or you get on TV or something, you might see some, you know, people at a different economic level. But you really don't do a lot of global work unless you do maybe conferences or something like that, and keynote speakers and things like that. But I've, in ministry, the way I did it, I was on the phone. I was over in England. I was working with people all over the world and really never left my home. And then Candy was such a unique individual. My job was to help do a lot of deliverance work and get her ready to go into church, and I would pass her on to another couple who would take her into church. I was the special ops. I'm the Black Hawk. I'm going into the darkness behind the enemy lines, get the captive, bring them out. I'm going to do the hard work behind the scenes that nobody knows, you know, the Navy SEALs. And when they're ready, somebody else, you know, can take it to the next step. So I was always kind of that way. And I was quiet and, you know, studied a lot about the different government programs and different countries and cultures and religion, and studied a lot about different cults and things like that that people did, and did a lot of reading, a lot of books, true stories, you know, about people, and all kinds of things. Never really did that as a mental health counselor. You read your textbooks, you know, and they might give you a paper to write, and you'd go do some research. But you mainly studied the psychologists like B.F. Skinner. And B.F. Skinner believed that we were more animalistic, and you would train us in our behaviors through pain or pleasure. You had Carl Rogers, who believed that we could talk this out in a talkative therapy. Sigmund Freud was still quite popular with a lot of people, you know, and he believed you had a super ego and an id, and he believed, you know, what he believed. Now, they came up with it, they kind of debunked him, but they came up with more rationalization. They came up, and people were trying to figure out how to help people in therapy. Talk therapy came up versus medical, you know, therapy. Did a lot of studying on early days of helping people, you know, in mental institutions and the different types of treatment that they did, you know, early on, because they didn't know what to do. And they were trying to help people, and they couldn't understand, you know, why humanity would do certain things to little kids or women, and, you know, they just didn't know. And so there's a lot of true stories out there. I would read mental health counseling. You just followed the textbooks, you know, that you had to read. And I remember the classes you learned medication and the different psychiatric disorders. And, you know, you took your test and, you know, moved on to the next class. And I think one class we had group therapy. You had to sit in the group and learn how to do group therapy and talk, you know. And I actually volunteered in college and did a help crisis line, which is real valuable when you're trying to help people, you know, by talking on the telephone, and there are, they call a help crisis line. That is real good volunteer training for anybody to get, because, you know, there's a lot of little rules that you have to do and stuff. Did you ever do that, Annie?
No, but I did do a 24-hour peer-to-peer telephone line for four years. I did do that.
Okay.
It was formal. The the encounters were done in meetings. You had meetings, you took turns, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's really helpful, like when you want to help people, because I'm trying to think, when I took my training to be a sexual assault response team member, I had to take certain things in Florida, which was all online, and then I had to go get trained with a sexual assault rape victim counselor, sort of like a helpline and stuff, because you had to be comfortable in the community. I was working with nurses from the hospitals, you know, emergency room, and people that were doing, you know, human trafficking. I sat on a task force for that for a while. And, you know, you learn about the emergency room, because they had to teach them about the tattoos so they could look to see if somebody that came in was brought in by a man, and they had certain tattoos and stuff. And I volunteered in psychiatric facilities, and you need to work with Alzheimer's patients and, you know, all kinds of things. And I did that, so I've got a very well-grounded viewpoint, where most mental health counselors, you know, they went and got their master's, and they went and worked in a community mental health center, supervised, took their test, and got into private practice, or stayed in the community mental health counseling, and that's about it, you know, very controlled environment. They never went into the jails. They never went into the homeless shelters. You know, the domestic violence centers. They never went into any of that. You know, they didn't do that. I did street evangelism with a pastor. We'd go into some of the gang-riddled streets, you know, and that kind of thing. And it is different, the peer-to-peer, and I understand that because when I went through my training, I could see the people who needed support and understanding just weren't getting it from the mental health counseling world. You know, the PhDs and the master social workers and the site, they just weren't getting the support and the comfort they needed from those people. So they said, well, we're just going to take care of ourselves. And we're going to go through some peer-to-peer training. We had it here. I think it was over 2 or 3 weekends, you know. And that kind of thing. And it was interesting because it was sort of a takeoff, you know, from AA, which was, you know, a peer support. And it was to help you get off alcohol. Then they went to Cocaine Anonymous and then Narcotic Anonymous and Sexual and Gambling Anonymous. But it was all the people who had the same problem. And you would go there, you know, and you had a meeting. And so peer-to-peer came along after all of that. And do you have any comments so far, Miss Annie? I'm looking at our time here. It's about 8:17.
Yeah, we got about less than 15 minutes left. I'm so interested in hearing about how therapists are trained. I never knew anything about that. Never really thought about it. You know, for such a hard job, you think they really teach you a lot of things to help people.
Well, it's changed over the years, but basically, you know, social workers, they believed at first, if we can change your social environment, that'll help you make better decisions. And then some of them chose to work in hospitals and some in the psychiatry area, so they got medical training. Mental health counselors or licensed professional counselors have a master's, and they all pretty much get the same standard. They got to study counseling. They got to study psychodynamics, medicine, child development, group support. I'm sure, and I remember, you know, you're going to learn a lot about the Sigmund Freud and Carl Rogers and B.F. Skinner, and you're going to write papers and you're going to look at research. And, you know, you're probably near the end. Mine was a 1 or 2 year program, you know. You're going to go do some volunteer work somewhere, you know, you're going to get some experience, then you're going to take tests, you know, and just like in regular college. And then you get your master's. And then in the state of Florida, what you would do is they had grandfathered a lot of us in, and then you would take a state licensing exam, cost you $500. You'd go down to Central Florida and take it. And if you passed, you got a license, and you were under the Medical Quality Assurance Department because they wanted to get insurance money, and you were treated then with the license as a medical personnel who could treat. First, no, you would diagnose. You had the ability now. You proved that on your state test. You've had 2 years of supervision by a licensed counselor, psychiatrist, psychologist. You can diagnose by listening to somebody talk. And you can treat a disease, and you can now file medical insurance and get paid Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Medicare, Medicaid, because it's medical insurance, right? And so you were becoming a medical diet, you know, doctor. I had experience in a rehab hospital. I'm right next to the physiatrist, the doctors, the psychiatrist, okay. Most mental health counselors didn't get that. They just got, went to work at a community. They worked 2 years, supervised, and they're going to do their 50 minutes and just have talk therapy. That's okay. You know, it works for a lot of people. They just need to talk to somebody who will listen, okay, and because they haven't had the chance, you know, to talk and express themselves or cry, and it is real important to be comfortable talking, and I had that, okay, I experienced that. Well, then I got nationally certified, so I had to take some state tests, records of my training. I became a nationally certified clinical mental health counselor. I went to Washington, D.C. as a lobbyist. I worked on the National Professional Standards Committee to make sure all the universities had the standardized classes, and I worked on a nominee. And I was a district rep for mental health counselors in the state of Florida. I traveled around free, had a lot of responsibilities, and held down a full-time job and raised family. And I had an identity. I was a professional, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then God took it all away and said, you're going to help people, but from a different perspective. And I had to start sort of all over again. And I got about 822. So I'll wind it up, and then you can close this up. So the anchor of every human being is love. It starts in the womb. It comes when the baby's going through, you know, birth. Right after birth to the mama's breast. It's the anchor is getting set and solid through the five senses, you know, touch, smells, sounds, hearing, taste, the environment that it's in, you know, okay, how it's treated, the noises that are at home, and if the child is hearing, I love you, you're loved, you're wanted, we want you, and he feels safe, you know, not a lot of jerking and loud noises, he learns that he's loved, whatever that means. He's at peace. Love means peace. It means I'm safe. I'm wanted. I'm accepted, whatever. You know, and the child doesn't know other than by responding by the five senses. If they're jerking all the time, you know, because it's noisy, if they're, they have pain because they're wet diaper or they don't have a peaceful sleep because they're, you know, waking up, they're getting jerked around, you know, just laid and ignored, okay, the anchor of love is not there. Something else is getting said. Words that are said, television that's on, radio that's playing. There's a lot of bad stuff that the child hears in the home, fighting, yelling, okay, smells are at work, the five senses are developing. The brain is developing. And if that anchor is not there, and the best way to look at it is when a child gets a little older and they're in their, and they can walk and they want to investigate a stranger, they'll run away from mama a little bit and then run back. Okay? You'll see. And then run a little bit and then go back. Okay? Mama's the safe place. Mama's the anchor. I can venture out, but I know I'm safe. I can go and do a swing, and Mama's there. And Mama, I'm safe. If I get sick, Mama's there. If I feel pain, Mama's there. Mama's there with a soft touch, a smile, a song. Mama gives me the breast or the bottle. She changes my wet diaper. I don't even know what that is. I don't even know I got a body. You know, what are these things? Toes? I have no idea. But I feel at peace. So the anchor is Mama. And when that is destroyed through abuse, we have a mess. And I got 8:25, so I'll leave it with you, and I'll see you next month, Miss Annie. Okay?
You can close it up. Thank you, Pastor Deborah. Thank you. It was a great show. I really appreciate you. I will close us out by saying you've been listening to Stop Child Abuse Now, which is abbreviated SCAN, radio show number 3431. All our shows are recorded and archived so that you can listen to them again on the website. And the website is NASCA.org. That's NAASCA.org. And that stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And let's see, we do shows 3 nights a week now, I think. You know what? I'm not sure how many nights a week we're doing shows right now. Sorry, don't listen to me. We're always looking for people to come on and tell their stories. You know, what was childhood like for you? What kind of healing have you done to get over your child abuse? That kind of thing. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to tell your story, you can email me. My name is Annie Marges, and my email is annmarges@gmail.com. If you want to tell your story, give me an email and I'll get you scheduled. And let's see, anything else I need to say? Nope. With that, I will play the outgoing music and say goodnight, everybody.
Hello, this is Pastor Deborah. I want to thank you for listening in to the Blog Talk Radio Show of NASCA and learning more about how to help children who've been abused, who are now adults, and the importance of agape love of a mother as the anchor of the soul, the physical body, and the spirit. I am Pastor Deborah. I will be back again next week with another radio show live for you. That will be May the 9th, 2024. You are welcome to come and listen, either on the show live or through the podcast of this on my many podcast shows, or on the video on the Hidden Kingdoms channel of YouTube under the playlist called Live Radio Blog Talk Shows. I think that might be it. But I want to say thank you for listening and learning. And I'll see you next week. And I am Pastor Deborah. Bye-bye.